Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome Brian K. Wright, and he is the host of Success Profiles Radio, and he's the publisher of Success Profiles Magazine. Now, over the last 7 years, Brian has interviewed world-class achievers, love that word, such as Darren Hardy, Jack Canfield, Laurel Langmire, Kevin Harrington, Sharon Lecter, Chris Powell, Dan Loke, and so many others. And with those lessons he has learned from these achievers and through his own experience, he seeks to educate, motivate, and inspire others to become a greater version of themselves. Now, Brian overcame a life-threatening illness in 2014, and some of the keys to his recovery included focusing on how he wanted to impact the world when he was healthy again and being aggressively thankful for everything in his life. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, Brian is going to share how overcoming that illness helped him be who he is now and how he helps other people, why you should write a book, repurposing content, how and why you should definitely do this, the benefits of connecting with successful people, and if we have time, I really want to chat with him about podcasting. It's a passion for both of us. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to chat with you. We had a terrific pre-chat, and I was like, ooh, we should have recorded that. Before we get started, tell the audience a bit about yourself, and then we can go over all the different topics that we want to cover.
Wow. Where do I begin? I went to school at Iowa State University, majoring in communication studies, ended up getting my master's degree in Nebraska in adult education, and ended up teaching public speaking and English composition and business math at a small two-year business college in Lincoln, Nebraska for almost 5 years. And that might sound like an odd combination of classes, but they were all required. And so I got to see just about every student before they graduated. And it was my job really to make it fun because lots of people don't enjoy one or all of those classes. So if you can make it fun to learn, I think the learning is easier to have. So that's what I did, and I enjoyed it. They ran it like a business, so they tried cramming as many people into the class as possible. And when you have 27 people in an English composition class, that's really almost unmanageable because you have to grade all their papers. But there was always attrition. It was a six-week course. We did this in six-week increments. And by about the halfway point, people dropped the class, and I ended up with 15 to 17 people in the class anyway, and that's a much more manageable number. So it worked out. The problem is those people have to retake the class if they drop it because it's required. So they don't make life any easier for themselves when they have to drop a class, but things come up, and I enjoyed it. So it's all about helping people realize that they can be expressive, that they do have a story, that they do have something of value to share with the world. And that mission has carried forward to my radio show and my magazine and ghostwriting books for people, helping people bring their message out to the world in a bigger way, because I do believe everyone is talented. In fact, Evan McCormick on my show says everyone has a Michael Jordan-level talent at something. A lot of people just don't cultivate it. And so I feel like that's my mission and my challenge is to help people see how amazing and wonderful they are. And if even one person can benefit from the message that you have, then it is worth telling for sure.
Well, listen, I agree. And at heart, we are all storytellers. I mean, we truly are. We may not recognize that we are. Go sit. I live in Southwest Louisiana. I'm not too far from the Gulf of Mexico. I'm in the middle of Cajun country. If you want to hear some terrific stories, go listen to a bunch of elderly Cajun men in a coffee shop. They're fascinating. I mean, picking up their oral histories, if you can understand the accent for some of them. Believe it or not, different towns in this this part of the country, you can tell who's from Ville Platte, you can tell from who's New Iberia. They all sound different. And they're all right here, but they have their own kind of patois. But listening to these gentlemen is just, and I'll tell them, I'm not staring, I'm listening. Do you guys mind? And they'll come on over, and they'll start telling me these stories that just have me going, oh, my gosh. See, and that's part of our oral history, I think, is part of our creativity, don't you think?
Yeah, totally.
Excellent. Well, listen, I wanted for you to, you know, kind of share what the illness was and how it brought you to where you are now. Because that sounds kind of catastrophic. I don't know what it was, but if it got you to where you are now, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in late 2013, early 2014, I was feeling very lethargic, and I was losing my appetite, and I was leaving work early. I had a part-time job working somewhere else, and not for myself just yet, but I just wasn't feeling right. In fact, I did my show one day, and it took every ounce of energy I had just to get through my show, because that's how run down I was. I went to bed right after my show. After it ended at 5 p.m. I went to bed at 5 o'clock, and I slept through the night. So it was a case where I decided, you know what, I need to go to a doctor. So I did, and my parents were in Arizona that winter. They're snowbirds, they're retired, and so I said, I'm not feeling well, and they said, you should go to a doctor. So we went to a doctor. Mom came with me, and they thought perhaps I had pneumonia, so they gave me a Z-Pak, and I stayed with my parents, and they said, you stay here until you feel better. I said, okay. So 3 days later, we were eating breakfast. It was on a Friday. And all I could eat was a half a strip of bacon. And I said, I'm full. And Dad says, that's not right. You need to go back to the doctor. So I did. And I don't remember very much of what happened. I drove to the urgent care. And then once I got there, I remember walking back to one of the rooms where the doctor would see me. And the next thing I knew, the doctor was talking to my mom, who was sitting beside me. And I thought, how did she get here? Because I left her in the waiting room. And the doctor was saying, he's not coherent. He's not answering my questions in complete sentences. He needs to go to the hospital right now. We're calling an ambulance. And Mom and I looked at each other like, what's going on here? So they put me on a stretcher, and I was in an ambulance. I went to the nearest hospital, which was about 10 minutes away. And I remember being in the ER, and the doctor was saying, they don't know what we're treating you for. We're going to run a bunch of tests. We don't know if it's pneumonia, the flu, or something else. But you're going to be here a while. And I remember asking, oh, so you mean like I'll be here a few hours? Oh, no, no, a few days, a few weeks, maybe longer. I wasn't really grasping it because I was just so far out of it. But then she mentioned ICU, and I thought, oh, I guess this is serious if she's mentioning ICU. But then she said, depending on what this is, we could end up putting you on a ventilator. And I'm so glad she didn't say life support, because that would have freaked me out. But I said, what is that? And she said, we would put a tube down your throat and a machine would breathe for you. I said, oh, I don't want that. And she says, well, we might have to. Well, thankfully, that didn't happen, although they actually did vote on it. And they decided to give me another day to see if I started improving. But I was in the ICU for 7 days. And I was in a regular private room for 7 more days after that. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. But I was told toward the end of my time that they were not sure if I was going to make it or not. Here's what they finally diagnosed: swine flu virus and pneumonia. So
that was an incredible combination
of things to have. In fact, they had a few people in that hospital who had the swine flu at that time, and they did tell me I was the only swine flu patient that did not have to go on a ventilator. And they called me their miracle patient, and I thought, wow, that's actually really incredible. But here's the thing. I wasn't strong enough to eat. My parents would come visit me at the hospital every day. They would take turns cutting my food for me at meals, and Dad remarked that I haven't done this for you in many, many years. I said, I know. But I wasn't strong enough to even pick up my fork and eat. He had to feed me. So that's how bad it was. And I was on oxygen in the ICU. And I remember thinking, during that time, because there's really not much you can do when you're in a hospital bed except lay around and think or watch TV or whatever, you know, just get lost in your own thoughts. I remember having a couple of guests on my show who also were hospitalized and were given a pretty dire prognosis, you know, you may never walk again, that kind of thing. Well, that wasn't said to me, but, you know, the thought of dying never occurred to me. It just didn't even occur to me. I just started focusing on how do I want to impact the world when I'm done being here. And so I thought, well, I want to keep doing my radio show. I want to interview amazing people. I want to bring those messages to the world. I want to write books. I want to speak on more stages. And I really thought about the idea of being aggressively thankful, not just thankful, but really, really owning it, just owning my gratefulness aggressively and just being very thankful, because when you're in a state of gratitude, your whole world changes. I also realized that I needed to treasure my friends and family even more, because you just don't know when you won't have that available to you, and then take nothing for granted for the same reason you just don't know when your last day is here. And so I took things from that experience, and after that I put together another book in the fall of 2014, and another one last year, and then I've got a brand new one coming out this month in just a few weeks, and it's based on interviews from my radio show. It's going to be called Success Profiles, Conversations with High Achievers, Volume 2, and it'll be available on Amazon. Volume 1 is available on Amazon now, and it's in Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and wherever books are sold. So that was a really interesting experience. I've never been through anything like that, and I never desire to go through anything like that again. But at least now I have a story.
No kidding.
But that's how that went.
Did you ever find out how you contracted this? I have not heard of it, to be honest.
Oh, I have no idea. I guess it works like the regular flu, except it's a different strain. I mean, I had heard of it before, but I didn't know anyone who had it. So,
well, I had heard
of
swine flu, but not the pneumonia component of it, which makes sense. I mean, pneumonia and flu kind of go together sometimes, but oh my goodness. So let me back up just a bit. So you were already doing your radio show when this event took place?
Right. I started my radio show in January 2012.
Oh.
And I called my station and said, look, I'm in the hospital. I'm going to have to put my show on hiatus for however long. So I ended up stopping my show for 3 months.
Oh, I can imagine. So were you writing during this time? Because, I mean, you're in the hospital, you're recovering, you're thinking. And I do want to talk about aggressive gratitude and what that looked like to you.
Yeah.
But what were you doing during this 3 months? I mean, were you kind of blocking out a new, you know, just in addition to what you're already doing, but maybe a different attitude to it and blocking out this? I'm dying to know what you're doing during those 3 months, because it would be easy to just lay around and go, well, that hurt. I didn't like that.
Well,
or did you get real busy?
There was a lot of laying around and just resting, because I had to regain my strength and my stamina. I mean, I couldn't talk for more than a minute or two at a time without feeling really physically exhausted. Because when the nurses changed shifts every 12 hours, they would brief. One would brief the other, and I kept hearing respiratory failure over and over again. So that would explain why I was on a breathing machine. Not a ventilator, but I was on oxygen, and, you know, respiratory therapist would come see me every 4 to 6 hours and do a treatment. But it was just about resting and recovering a lot. And so I spent 3 more weeks staying with my parents, and I was on an oxygen machine, home health, you know, through a home health agency. And thank goodness the Olympics were on, because it gave me something to pay attention to, because daytime television is not a reason to be home. It's just not.
No.
It's awful.
I agree.
But the Olympics were on, so I had something to focus on, which I'm very thankful for, and had a chance to play with the dog, so that was also a nice diversion. But I wasn't online much. I was getting up to walk rarely at first, but then, you know, my goal was to be able to walk around the block, which about a week after my hospitalization, I started being able to walk a little bit, and then built up to walking around the block once, and then walking around the block three times, and then doing that a couple times a day. And then toward the end of my recovery, I had a 45-minute conversation with a friend of mine. He did most of the talking. I thought, wow, this feels like my radio show, because I interview people and they do the majority of the talking. And it was at that point that I realized I could probably go back to doing my show. And what I ended up doing was getting a job right after I was released from doctor's care in a call center. It was, I mean, that's the low-hanging fruit, and I've done it before, so I did that. And about a month after that, I started doing my show again.
So basically, and I'm just guessing here, by going to the call center, it was a way, I'm thinking, to build up your voice, build up your stamina, and just get you out of the house.
Right, exactly, because the phone calls usually were maybe 2 or 3 minutes at the most.
Right.
If I had to hit pause on the dialer, I could, although, you know, management doesn't really like it when you hit pause on the dialer very much, but I had to, so there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it got easier. The longer time went, the easier it was, and I was able to resume a normal schedule, you know, within about a month or so. But, I mean, I was working, so that helped a lot.
It's an amazing story.
It's a very interesting experience, and I learned a lot. And I grew to really appreciate what I have and to have a sense of urgency about my mission, which I think was also very, very important. So now I'm doing a magazine, and I'm ghostwriting books for people, helping them get their message out, and I'm continuing to do my radio show. And It's a fun ride. I really, really enjoy my work.
Oh, I know you do. I've listened to a couple of your episodes. They're fascinating. Let's talk about aggressive gratitude. I know what it looks like to me, and believe me, I practice it. It took me the longest kind of time because, you know, you're young, you're a teenager, you're bulletproof, you're the smartest person in the room, the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then life kind of smacks you around a bit like it did with you. Or in some cases, it smacks you around a good bit, and you just have to, you can either wallow, or you can go, you know what, there's so many other things that are great. Let's concentrate on those. And I'm losing my voice, sorry. So let's talk about what aggressive gratitude looks like to you.
Yeah. I think it just means being thankful multiple times during the day. And one thing that Tony Robbins says is when something that doesn't go your way happens, he teaches us to ask, what's good about this? What's the lesson here? And so I've been training myself to think that way because being an entrepreneur is absolutely a roller coaster. I mean, there's ups and there's downs, and there's always a lesson in everything that happens. And so I really do believe, and this is something that's interesting, I do believe that when something occurs in our life over and over and over again, it's because we haven't learned the lesson yet. And once we pass the test, then that lesson, that circumstance doesn't appear anymore, or at least not as much. So I find that if I'm going through the same thing over and over and over again, it probably means there's a test that I haven't passed yet. And so I start asking myself, well, what is that? What can I take from this? What can I learn from this? What do I need to do differently? Because if you don't, then you end up in a loop where it's like Groundhog Day. Everything just keeps happening over and over and over again, exactly the same, and you can't break the cycle. So to break the cycle, you have to do something differently, or to think differently, or to behave differently, or respond differently to what's going on around you.
Oh, listen, I agree with you. I find, and again, it took me a while. I had to get past my own being a punk. We're all punks. I don't care what anybody says. You're not a nice person for the most, you know, when you're part of your life, you're just not a nice guy, nice girl. And then you have to kind of figure out, yeah, this isn't really working out for me. So what can I do differently? And I agree with you. Gratitude is just, it can be something as simple as, look, I live in the deep south. I mentioned that. We don't get autumn here. We just don't. Our leaves turn khaki brown. They fall down. That's it. We don't get colors. We don't get anything. The other day, I was looking out my windows. I have a bank of windows that, you know, goes out to the backyard. And I saw a single lone bright yellow leaf on one of my pecan trees. I couldn't grab my phone quick enough. I was so excited.
Wow.
Silly things like that. It's like, oh, it's yellow, it's autumn. I mean, we do, you know, I fake it. I buy mums and not gladiolas, but marigolds and lots of pumpkins. And, you know, I fake it. I bring in as much color as I can. But we don't see the gorgeous leaves turning. That lone leaf made my day. I promise you it did. I mean, I smiled all day long. It was just one leaf. Yeah, but, you know, I spend a lot of time on Pinterest looking at other people's pictures going, okay, that makes my heart happy. But gratitude, and I think a lot of insightfulness about what you're doing, where you're going, why you maybe shouldn't have done that, I think is kind of the secret sauce. And it sounds like you do too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think it's just training your mind to think differently. I mean, how do champions think? They think about what lesson they can take from it. Life happens for you, not to you. And I think a lot of people have that victim mentality. Oh, why is this happening to me? Ask yourself, why is this happening for you? It's a very different mindset. It's a subtle shift, but it makes a huge difference.
I agree with you 100%. It's kind of like, you know, you see these goofy Hallmark movies, like, well, what if I had married my high school sweetheart? And then they do these, oh, you went back and found out that good thing you didn't. It's just, you're right. These things happen for you, and you have to be interested enough, compelled enough to go, well, what was the lesson here? And it may not show up right away. It can show up years down the road. But be aware enough to figure it out and go, aha, okay, well, thanks. And keep on moving.
Exactly.
So, this is a great conversation. So let's talk about why you should write a book, because I know you've got one or two, I think, that are out now, and you told me you've got another one coming. Three. Did the one for October land already? Did you mention that, right?
No, it hasn't yet. It's in the formatting phase right now. Actually, that'll be book number four. 10 years ago, I did a student leadership book. And then my last three books have been based on themes from my radio show. And then I ghostwrite books for other people. So, I think it's very important, if you've got a message to share with the world, that you do that. And there are lots of really great reasons to write a book. I mean, first of all, it gives you credibility, and people perceive that you're the expert. Now, hopefully you really are, but it's really about perception. And if someone thinks that you're the expert, you have a chance to be hired to speak on stage or to be on radio shows or podcasts, very much like this one. And I really think that if you are an expert in something, you should tell your story and you should tell a book. Now, it's easier than ever because you don't have to go through a traditional publisher anymore. You can self-publish. The internet has opened up a lot of doors. That being said, a lot of really wonderful books have hit the market, and some not so great books have hit the market because some people just aren't good writers. And those people need to hire a ghostwriter or get a coach. But
absolutely. And they need to get a good editor. I mean, you have no idea. I must have over 6,000 books on my Kindle reader, over 6,000. Mm. I have in my home and in my garage probably close to 4,000 books. I'm a voracious reader, physical books. I don't really even read them anymore. I'm always on the Kindle. But I'll tell you right now, the minute I get to a book that is so badly edited, I don't care what the content is. I don't care how brilliant it's supposed to be. My reader soul is just going, ouch, ouch, oh, crap, no. And I will delete that book as quick as you can. And, you know, I won't leave a nasty thing on, you know, Amazon reviews, but I will try to get in touch with the author and say, this has such potential and I would have loved to read it. Will you let me know when it's been edited properly? And most of the time they'll go, oh, I didn't know. How can you not know? But they didn't. You know, they're in a hurry, get that book up. You know, they've got great things to say, but they didn't do their due diligence. And I think that's a big problem with writing a book. Get a decent editor or four or five or whatever it is that you need to do, but make it shine.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's very important. So, you know, have your book edited. Absolutely. But having a book gives you a lot of credibility and authority in the marketplace. If you think about it, if there are, let's just say, three people in your industry in any market, there's usually more. But when someone is thinking about hiring a realtor or auto mechanic or whatever, they get quotes. And usually the magic number is three. So let's just say that there are three people in your niche, in your market, that someone is considering. If you are the one, the only one of those three who has written a book, who is someone going to perceive to be the better authority, the best authority, the person who wrote the book? So do it. Get your book done. It also helps you stand out from your competitors for exactly the same reason, because not everyone does have a book. In fact, I think studies have shown that over 80% of people want to write a book, but so few people actually do. And
true.
You know, there are reasons for that. People don't think they have time. They don't think they have something legitimate to share. They don't think they're good enough writers. Well, having a good writing coach or having a ghostwriter solves all of that, because you're sourcing that out to someone who knows how to do it. Another reason why it's a great opportunity, writing a book, that is because you can sell the book. Now, you're not going to become a multimillionaire selling just your book. The only people who really do are people who are extremely well-known. I mean, Oprah could write a book and, you know, she'll sell a million copies. If your book gets on Oprah, you know, your book will sell very, very well. If you are very well-known already, you have a chance of having your book being very, very lucrative. But I'll tell you what, it's not just about selling the book. It's about what you can spin the book off into. You can have a call to action for people to visit your website. You can capture emails and names, and they become part of your community. You can use your book to promote your coaching program, and sometimes people will hire you to coach them because they believe that you are the person that is best positioned to help them with their problem. Your book has adequately spelled out the pain point and the solution. And you know what? It's just really fantastic. You have extra sources of revenue. I mean, T. Harv Eker's Secrets of the Millionaire Mind was really a giant commercial for his 3-day free Millionaire Mind Intensive. And so
yep,
he
sure
gets
is.
You to his free event for 3 days, and then after every session, they are upselling a different program, and they make a lot of money doing that. Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a giant commercial for his cash flow game. If you've read it, you realize that he brings that up a lot, and there's a call to action at the end to where you can buy his cash flow game. You know, if someone
right.
is, you know, selling their $20 book and they can make a $200 sale or a $2,000 sale on the back end, go do it.
Oh,
that's
I agree with you. No, it really isn't. And if you're smarter than a lot of people, me being included right now, my book is still being edited, and I've been working on it for a while. It's starting to really make me irritable, but we'll get
mm-hmm.
it done. But one of the things that I finally decided I need to do with this, and, you know, talk about the course, talk about coaching, talk about mentoring. There are so many different things that have actually spawned from me writing this book. I was like, oh, yeah, I can add that. That will be of assistance to people who want to do what I want to do. So that's part of the repurposing your content, but it's also making that book really work for you. So I completely understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So repurposing
Absolutely.
Content, yeah, and you've done that. I mean, you have done a terrific job with that. You've taken your podcasts and you've turned those into books. You know, I'm sure you've written articles and created memes. I mean, there's so many things that you can do. But let's talk a bit. Oh, before I go too far down that rabbit hole, what prompted you to start the book, the first book? I mean, did you already have the content? Because this is kind of a twofer here. We're talking about repurposing. We're talking about the book
yeah.
and, you know, making it all part of one big bucket, I guess. So was your first one or two books, were those basically because of the podcast?
The first one was not. I wasn't doing my show yet when I wrote my first book. I had gone to a 4-day event of James Malincheck, his college speaking program, where he talks to people about how to build a speaking business in the college niche. And I thought, what a great idea, you know, to speak at colleges. And he talks about how it's really a lot easier to get into that market if you have a book. And so I wrote a student leadership book. And I sat out on my patio one Sunday morning with a legal pad, and I wrote a question at the top of the page, what makes an excellent leader? And I tried to come up with at least 21 different answers to that question. I came up with 30. And as I started writing, I realized those 30 ideas merged into 21 because there were some that were really, really similar. But every answer to that question was a short chapter. And my first book was a 96-page book. Your book doesn't have to be 400 pages long because guess what? Most people aren't going to read a book that much, that big. I mean, Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principles, is that big. But he has decades of credibility to go along with it. And so people will read and apply that book. And it is one of the best books I've ever read. But most people after high school or after school don't read. They just don't want to. And so my first book was shorter on purpose because I want people to feel like if they spend an hour and a half reading my book, they can feel like they've read a book. It's an accomplishment for some people to get through an entire book. And people's attention spans are a lot shorter than they used to be. And so say your message and be done. No fluff, please. I just don't like reading books that take forever to get to their point. And I feel that way about videos, too. You know, you see some people's videos that are 20 minutes long, and I think at the end of it, you really could have said this in 3 minutes. Really, you could have.
Webinars. Webinars drive
webinars
me crazy.
Webinars are the worst offenders of this. Yeah. It's like, come on.
I know you're going to sell me. Just do it. You know, just go ahead and sell
yeah.
me. Tell me what you want. And then convince me why I might want to do what you want me to do.
Right.
I hate webinars.
Why do you
Facebook
Live?
I almost never stick
They're
around for them.
More than 5 minutes because I respect people's time. I say my thing, and I'm done. And I think people appreciate that because I get more views. I haven't done a live in a while. But whenever I do a live, I get usually over 100 views. Sometimes I get over 1,000 because people share it.
Exactly. Just and listen, we have our spidey sense up all the time. We're being sold all the time. We live in a world where everything is a message or a message within a message. And most of us are paying attention to what's not being said. We also know when we're being played. We're smarter than
yep.
that. So just,
yep.
you're right, get to the point. That drives me crazy. Just, why are you bothering me with this? Just get to the point. I'll make a decision quickly if you just tell me what it is that we're talking about here.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so your book process, you gave us a hint of it. You know, you started out with a question, then you answered
yeah.
the question. Then what was the next process after you winnowed it down to 2021? Where did you go from there? Because, listen, it's daunting. I've been trying to write
it
this book for the darndest kind of time. I can storytell all day long. You give me a keyboard, and what I've got is an epic blank page. It's ridiculous. I know I've got plenty to say. I know I have, you know, I can back up everything I've got to say, but I hit that keyboard, and I just go, I think I'll go
yeah.
make a gumbo. I know I'm not
yeah.
the only one that does this.
Well, in the case of the student leadership book, it was called Student Leadership Strategies, 21 Easy Ways to Become a Center of Influence in Your Group. And so I was building the case for becoming a center of influence and being a leader by becoming a center of influence. And so at the beginning of each chapter, what I would do is I would build a case for why that particular facet of leadership was important. And then I would share a story, whether it was a story from college or high school or a story from pop culture, because people love to read stories. The mistake that people make is they just tell their stories, and there's no thread, no common thread for it. It's like, okay, you're telling me a story. Where is this going? Why are you telling this story to me? We'll build the case for it first. I tell people this when I teach English composition or when I teach public speaking, for example. Make your point and then use stories to support your point, not the other way around.
See, I have not been doing that.
Confused.
I think you just helped me rewrite my book.
Oh, good.
Seriously, I just wrote that down. I was scribbling like a mad person. That is brilliant.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm pretty sure I have not been doing that. I've got some great stories. I've got some great whys you can do this. And here's how I did not make the case. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And here's something else, pro tip, that I can share too. I talk with my ghostwriting clients because a lot of them come to me thinking, there's so much I can say, but how do I organize this? I tell them to create an outline. We talk through some of the main topics and main themes that they're going to write about. I encourage them to make an outline. Then I encourage them to write down, not write down their entire story, but tell them to write down what stories they plan to tell, whether it's a keyword or a sentence that will trigger what that story is. And then, like a grid, plot your stories into the outline. Where does this story fit best? So, for example, if you're
again,
talking
about...
Again,
I'm not ignoring. I'm scribbling.
I totally understand.
Keep going.
Because if let's just say that you're talking about leadership, for example, and one of the chapters I wrote about was that a great leader makes other people feel welcome in their presence. Well, I'm going to save my stories about getting along with new people in the group and encouraging new people to join the group. I would save those stories for that chapter because that's where it makes the most sense to tell that story. So plot down what your story, write down what your stories are going to be and figure out where in your outline those stories belong. Because I think when you have that clarity, it makes it a lot easier. In fact, I was coaching one of my clients through the process of writing his book. He decided to write it himself, and he hired me to coach him. And so we had eight hour-long sessions, where we talked about different questions and different things that he was coming up with. And it expanded into this massive conversation about how can he promote the book when he's done. It turned into this big movement. And he's like, wow, you've expanded my mind. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad. It wasn't really what I was trying to do, but he ran with it. But he said he was going on a cruise during our eight sessions. And so I said, that's fine. We can take a hiatus from our coaching sessions while you're on your cruise. He's going to go to Japan and he's going to be gone for 3 weeks. And he said, I'm going to write my book on the cruise. I'm like, really? He's like, yes, I am. I said, okay, outline your stuff before you go. Because if you have an outline, your book will essentially write itself. If you do not outline in advance, you're going to struggle. And when he came back from his cruise, he said, you were right about something. I said, what was that? He said, the chapters that I outlined in advance wrote themselves very easily, and the few chapters that I didn't get to outline in advance were really hard. I said, yep, thank you for validating that. So that's what I tell people is outline your stuff. I mean, I remember in high school English classes when we would write research papers, we were told to do an outline. And I remember having a stack of index cards, and the teacher told us for every point that you were planning to make, write down on a separate index card what that point was, what your research was, little key phrases about what you plan on talking about, and maybe the stories you plan on telling. And having them on index cards means that you can shuffle your cards in any order you want without having committed it to paper first. Because now with computers, you can copy-paste and just move things around. But pre-internet, this was in the 80s, we were using index cards. And I really was very thankful. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going back to the primitive way of doing things once in a while. If you've committed your energy to writing things down on paper or on index cards, and you have one index card per point on your outline, it allows you to expand and figure out, okay, what exactly can I say here? Key phrases to what your stories are. Key phrases to research you plan on citing. You know, maybe you might want to say, I learned from Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principle, something about this, and this is what he said about it. Maybe your personal story or a story from pop culture, but have all of that on each index card and shuffle the cards as you need to. And it'll make things so much easier. So then when you write your book, all you have to do is just flip your next card, write, flip your next card, right, and you have a pretty good idea of how far along you actually are in your book. Because if your stack of cards is halfway done, you have a pretty good idea that you're probably halfway done writing your book.
Listen, I still use index cards. In fact, I just put a note. You know, I've got my little Dollar Tree shopping list, and I will, you know, spend a couple dollars on a, you know, dollar a pack of these things. And I do this, and I am a techie nerd. I mean, I have a computer science degree. I can whip in and out of a computer like nobody's business. But along with that love of reading is that love of actually putting pen to paper. And I find it sticks with me better. You're right. The energy of thinking about it, writing it down, it commits it to memory easier. And listen, and one of the things that I do, I use index cards for everything. I use them to keep track of the social media I'm creating for my clients. I, you know,
mm-hmm.
use it to keep track of what I'm doing for a web development client. One of the most fun things for me is to, you have crossed everything off of that index card, and the final step is to, believe it or not, put it through the shredder because I'm done.
Yeah.
It's cathartic to shred an index card. Go figure.
Absolutely. In fact, sometimes when I'm angry with someone, I've occasionally written a letter to that person with the intention of never sending it, and then I shred it or burn it, and I have released that energy to the universe. I feel so much better.
And I've done things like that, too. When I was going through my divorce, you should have seen the index cards. They were color-coded. They were gorgeous. And then there came a point where I went, I don't want to see this or read it or hear it anymore. I'm done. Again, very cathartic. It was my internal version of a bonfire. It really did help. And I was, you know, I moved on. So I completely
yeah.
get that. So that's brilliant. So the outline, let me see if I got this. Outline, make your case, I think should be first in the chapter. But make an outline, make your case, then work on your story, plot your intro, I think. So go ahead and if you don't mind, just kind of go over one, you know, bullet points if you don't mind, because I think I was scribbling in the wrong direction. I was just, wherever I could find a white spot, I put something down.
Yeah. Here,
oh, and hire a book
something
coach.
That might help people, let me share something that might help people feel get unstuck. A lot of people think that you have to start by coming up with your title first. It's not necessarily true. I mean, you might have a general idea of what your title is. That's why sometimes people call it a working title, because it's subject to change. I don't write my introduction first. I usually write the intro last. Why? Because I don't know what the book is going to turn out to be. If I write the intro first, then I'm sort of married to the structure that I'm planning out. And if the book isn't going there, then I get really stuck. And so I write the book first, and then upon assessing how it turned out, it's very easy for me to summarize the book by writing the intro when I'm done. You think about it like this. Do movies and television shows film in sequential order? No, they don't. They don't, because if you're filming a movie, for example, and let's just say four scenes happen in one location, you're going to film all of the scenes that happen in that location, even though it's way out of sequential order, to save a lot of money and a lot of time. And then you move to the next location, you film all the scenes that are going to be filmed there. And then that's what the editor's job is to do, is to put things in sequential order. Sometimes writing a book can be a little bit like that. Sometimes,
that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes if I've got, and this is another benefit for having an outline, if I'm looking at my outline, and let's just say we have 21 chapters for the sake of example. If something happened to me today and I think, oh, this might be a perfect story for this chapter. Well, if you're married to the idea of writing your book sequentially, you're writing it down, and by the time you get to it, you may have forgotten what just happened to you. But if you're okay with writing your book not in sequential order, this is the beautiful part about having outlines and graphing things out, write your story, write that story there and save it someplace, and then just make a little note in your document, insert such and such story here. Now you can just grab it, you can just copy paste it and put it in your document there. But you've already written that story, but now you've just made a note in your document, this is where this story goes, and you know, look for this, like if you saved it under the name of such and such a document, you could just say, look for such and such a document, insert story here. So there's just a lot of different things you can do. So if you're being really observant about what's going on in the world around you, I mean, a lot of people write based on what their lives are. When people write songs, they write based on experiences. And so
your life is not sequential. I mean, I don't know why we try to pretend that it is.
Yeah.
Life is messy.
Absolutely.
Life is interesting. It's fascinating, but it's not in order.
No, you're right. And so if you are open to the message that you're supposed to receive, then receive it, write it down, and just put it in the book where it belongs, and it makes sense at the end. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you're organized, that really helps. But yeah, if you want to get, if you want to prevent the idea of feeling stuck, one thing that'll really help, like my original point was, there's nothing that says you have to write your introductory chapter first. In fact, I often write it last.
And I'm so glad you said that, because I couldn't find my way to write that chapter. It didn't make sense, because I knew probably at gut level that what I thought I was going to write wasn't going to be it at all. And as it turns out, I was exactly correct, because things would change, my attitude would change. I'm writing a book about podcasting, and I'll be very frank with you. I spend some time lurking in some of these podcast groups, and I just clench my teeth. A lot of the information that is being shared, like it is wisdom, just makes me want to smack somebody. So I'm doing it differently. And what I thought I was going to write isn't even close to what my original premise was, which may be why it took me so long to do it, and I'm glad it happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings up a really great point. If you're stuck about what to write about, you know, usually as entrepreneurs, we think about where is the gap and let's rush in to fill it. Sometimes you want to write about something because you're angry at what you're seeing in the world. Jeffrey Gittimer, when I interviewed him on my show, he was my 100th episode. I asked him, so why did you write a book? He's like, I never really set out to write a book. I just decided to start writing a blog about all the stupid things that salespeople do. And after I had 100 of those, I realized I have a book here. And so he just repurposed his blog content. And here's the thing. If you are regularly creating content, whether it's Facebook Live videos, whether it's blogs, whatever the case is, and you think, oh, now I have to write a book. Well, you know, is there something in what you've already created that you can already use and repurpose? That's what I did with my radio show. I repurposed interviews from my radio show into a book. I've done that now 3 times. My student leadership book was first, and then I've done 3 books repurposed from my content. And sometimes people ask me, when are you going to write your story? I'm like, that's coming. My story's not done yet. I'm not ready to share that yet. But it's going to come someday.
I'm not sure I'll ever do that, but I understand where you're going. So one of my questions is, like you, I'm very interested in interviewing high-profile people, people who are authors. I somehow got into the habit, or the reputation, if you will, of being a good author podcast person, you know, host. And I love talking with authors. I'm not one yet, but I will be. And I think I shared this with you during our pre-call. I have got an entire bookcase in my office, which is filled with nothing but books from people I've interviewed. You know, a lot of them are author-graphed, you know, they're, you know, written personally to me. On those books, this is going to sound silly, I won't even crack the spine. I will open it just enough so I can take a picture of it and put it on Facebook and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. But I will not crack that spine. It's a special book to me. Ben Gay III has written some wonderful notes to me in his books. Other people have too. I will go find that book, either buy a different copy of it so I can put it somewhere in the house and scribble on it, annotate it, put yellow sticky notes on it, or better yet, find a Kindle version of it. I'm not going to break a book that somebody gave me. I don't know what that's about, but I won't.
Yeah.
Strange, I know. So I wind up with multiple copies, at least 2 copies of every book that I've got in this bookcase. But I love going to the mailbox and going, oh, Brian just sent me a book. I mean, I just love that. And then it goes in my stack. I have a weekend reading stack in there always. You know, and I read history, and I read a lot of, you know, some light nonfiction, but my weekend reading is the gifts that come to me in the mailbox. You know, I look at those, and then I go find the version of it, you know, the book of it that I'm willing to scribble on and, you know, break that spine. So, you know, it's become a habit for the longest kind of time.
Yeah, there's something really magical about cracking open a physical book, smelling the pages.
There is. Yep.
And
yep,
just marking your place, making notes in the margins. I mean, I just love that.
Sticky notes. I'm telling you, I've got one book by Lon Safko that is so full of sticky notes that I actually had to put it at the bottom of a stack to kind of mush it down, kind of like you do when you're closing a suitcase.
Right.
Just chock-a-block full. But I look at that, and I look at those notes sticking here, there, and yonder. Ooh, what did I miss? Let me go back and look. It's almost like a breadcrumb. You know, go see what I missed. Why did I do this? What was there? What was the lesson that day, and what is it today?
Yeah, and when you reread a book, it's a lot like watching a really good movie for the second time. You catch things that you missed the first time, or you are at a different space in your life to where you are now open to the wisdom in the book in a different way than you were before.
Absolutely. I've got books that I've read multiple times during my life. I mean, multiple times. And like you, I find something new every time. It's like, I never saw that. But when your eye is ready, your soul is ready, your whatever, yeah. When you're ready, you spot it. And one thing about Kindle, and I don't know if other people do this as well, but I was very resistant to the thought of a Kindle until a friend of mine talked me into it, and I'm glad she did, because I love having a book in my hands. But I also find with Kindle, you know, you can highlight, you can, you know, you, there's a lot you can do. But I tend to read from the middle of a page, believe it or not. I open up the page, I'm looking at the first sentence, then I focus on the middle, and my eye just kind of goes from there, and I'm a speed reader, apparently. And I can pick up so much content by looking at the middle of the page. I'm not going, you know, sentence by sentence, line by line. Do you do that?
Sometimes what I'll do is I'll read the first sentence in a paragraph and maybe skim through the example. Sometimes if an author has done a key takeaways section at the end, if I'm in a really big hurry, then I'll just read the key takeaways.
Yeah.
And if I want to learn more about what that was, then I'll go back.
I do the same. And when I'm opening, you know, a book, and I've done this since I was a kid, I'll read the first, chapter or two, and then I have to go read the end, which used to drive my mother crazy. Why are you reading the end? I just have to know. Because if I don't like the end, I'm probably not going to go through the rest of it. But I'm trying to get better about that, not, you know, cheating. Still, it's a lifetime thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so now I need to know, we've got about 8 more minutes. We've talked about repurposing content and why you should write a book, and thank you for all of that. I mean, I was scribbling like crazy. The benefits of connecting with successful people, how have you connected with so many really high-profile names? How did you do that?
I think,
and why did you do that?
Go to events. Go to events where they're speaking at. That's really important, you know, invest and go to an event where some of these people are speaking, because they're usually pretty accessible. You know, they'll talk to you. Sometimes you meet people who aren't speakers at that event who turn out to be really great friends or really great collaborative partners. You just never know. Nowadays, I go to events for completely different reasons. Now that I have a podcast, now that I have a magazine, I'm looking for people whose message I can illuminate. I'm looking for promotional partners. I'm not looking for, hey, you want to come be on my show? I'm not needy like that right now. In the beginning, it's like, I need guests. Who can I get? And that's fine. You have to start somewhere. We all do. But now I find that people in my network are connecting me to people that they think I should interview. And that's also really great. So really I'm making most of my connections through interviewing them first on my radio show. And I get a whole hour with them. In some cases, it's like I'm getting free coaching. I'm asking the questions of them that I always would have wanted to ask, or that I think other people would want to know the answers to. And
oh,
in some
you just
cases,
book coached
those
me.
Have expanded
I mean,
friendships.
Exactly. I mean, you just gave me some tremendous book coaching. It wasn't the purpose of this interview, but oh my goodness. I mean, how lucky am I?
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yes. I'm probably going to shoot you a note and go, okay, this is what I think you said. You know, let's chat about this a bit. And you're right. With my podcast, because I interview so many authors, I'm constantly being referred. And as it turns out, I'm now on a lot of PR lists. You know, I get, you know, PR requests from a lot of people. It just happened organically. It was never my thought process, but thank goodness for it. And part of this is definitely one of the chapters in my book. Do you know who Larry Winkett is?
Yes.
We all know who Larry Winkett is. He's written 6 New York Times bestsellers. One of the chapters is how Larry Winkett saved my podcast. And he did. So, I mean, I was ready to give up. I was just, how do I, and you mentioned it, how do you find guests? What am I doing? What's going on? Am I wasting my time? And I was just about at my wit's end. I couldn't find guests. I didn't know what to do. Nobody taught me how to do what I do. I've been doing this for 10 years, so basically self-taught. But I had been a fan of Larry's. I love his books. I have all of them. And I had interviewed Bob Berg and a couple of other people. And I just, it just occurred to me, send him a note on Facebook, explain who you are, you know, explain that you have had, you know, buddies of his on the podcast. Would he be interested? And I thought, well, he can say yes or no or ignore me, which is essentially a no. There's only two answers. And I walked off. And 10 minutes later, I still get, you know, excited about this. And this was years ago. I looked at my Facebook messages, and there was a, sure, I'd love to. I went, okay. And it just took off from there. So sometimes you just have to ask is my point.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, and it's just reach out because Greg Reed has said something to me that's really profound. The most successful people actually are the most accessible because they're willing to share their knowledge and their experience because there's enough success to go around.
Absolutely. And I have found the same thing. The kindest people and the most willing to be helpful are those who are high profile and they're very interesting people. I mean, they're not hugging everything to their chest and going, no, I'm not going to help you. They basically live their lives in search of ways to help other people.
Yeah, exactly.
So listen,
exactly.
We've got
to I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I get to meet the darndest people. In fact, you are a referral. I was in touch with my friend Tammy, and she said, oh, you've got to talk to Brian. I mean, within one day, we were set up and ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, she asked me, are you available this Friday? And I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll help your friend. I'd love to.
And, you know, honestly, most of the time I'm booked 3 months in advance, but, you know, we had a domino effect in August, and I finally got caught up. But thank you for coming on at such short notice. I really appreciate it. Now, before we have to say goodbye, which is coming quickly, tell people where they can find you and anything else that you want them to know right now.
Yeah. They can find me at briankwright.com. That's BRIANKWRAGHT. briankwright.com. They can find out everything they want to know about me. They can find out about my radio show. They can find out about subscribing to my magazine. They can find out about inquiring to have me help them write their book if they want to. And I'm on social media. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You can find me really just about everywhere, and I'm responsive to messages.
Wow, that is so excellent. Well, Brian, thank you. It has been a distinct pleasure speaking with you today, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience and me. You ought to see my scribbles. I ought to take a picture of it and send it to you. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your journey. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, Denise.
Oh, my pleasure. Now I need to get this out of the way and get, there we go. It's been one of those mornings.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.